This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ashley Banfield, and this is Drop Dead Serious. I have not been able to stop thinking about Brian Koberger's new life. I get it. It's not like he hasn't already been locked up for the last 2.5 years. However, I will say this. Things are very, very different, both physically and mentally, when you get sent away to a state prison or a federal prison for the rest of your life. It is very different. There's so many things that I've learned over the course of my, 3-4 decades, who's counting, in this business. But when I met Larry Levine, I started to learn way more than I thought existed about prison life, because Larry has lived it. He's been in 11 different institutions, and he took his knowledge when he got out, and he did what we all hope, inmates will do. Make something of your life, right? He did. He made something of his life. And he runs a business now where he trains people who are going to prison
for how to be an inmate,
right? How to get through the system, what to expect, what not to fear, what to fear. Like, the Martha Stewarts of the world love this guy because they don't know what's coming, and Larry knows. And so Larry has a business called Wall Street Prison Consultants, and he has written a couple of books. Very good books. Latest one is Prison Politics 101, Mastering the Art of Survival. The book before that was Lies My Lawyer Told Me. And when I thought about Brian Koberger's new life, post admitting and confessing to his horrendous murders of those 4 kids in Idaho, I wondered, what's it going to be like for him? Not only day to day, but day one, night one. But I also wondered psychologically, what it takes and what hits you. You're like, what goes through your mind when you are facing the rest of your life in a box? No opportunity for parole. They call it toe tag parole, right? You're not going out unless you got a tag on your toe in a pine box. But there's so much at stake, and there's so much protocol, and there's so much like logistics that come into play after sentencing, which by my watch is coming up pretty soon, right? It's the end of this month. So I thought, I'm going to give Larry a call and ask him about everything that Brian Koberger is about to go through in his new life as an inmate for life. And here's our conversation. Larry, if there's anybody who can lay out for me what Brian Koberger is about to face just on day one, just on the transfer date when he goes from the county jail to a state prison, walk me through day one.
All right. Well, they're going to grab his ass out of the county jail, probably at dark 30, whatever time, put him on a transport bus. Maybe there's some other county jail inmates going to state prison. His whole way there, anxiety, his heart's going to be beating. He doesn't know what to expect. And remember, where he's at now is a county jail. It's a detention center. Well, prison is an entirely different world of its own. So as the bus is rolling down the highway and he gets closer and closer, his anxiety level is going to go up. Finally,
does
he's
it
going
really?
To
you
see
know,
that.
You can feel that.
Oh,
you know that it's getting closer.
Ash, I've been in 11 different prisons. Remember? I know. I know what goes through your head. Yeah, you can see it from a distance because this is a maximum security. He's not going to a kiddie camp somewhere. So good mile away. I mean, you're going to see the wall, the fence, whatever it is. And as you get closer, that wall is going to get bigger and it's going to get taller. And he's going to realize I'm going to be here for the rest of my life, which I don't think will be that long because I think somebody's going to kill him probably. But he's going to know that that's his new home for the rest of his life. They're going to bring him in. They're going to strip search him. Make him cough. They're going to look up his butt, make sure he doesn't have a machine gun in there or anything. And then they're going to bring him into what's called R&D, receiving and discharge. They're going to fingerprint him. They fingerprint everybody because they have to make sure it's really him, even though they know it's him. They'll fingerprint him. They'll take his picture. They'll give him an ID card. And they're going to run him through orientation where they're going to talk to him about the institution. They're going to give him some uniforms, probably, I'm saying probably because I've seen it different ways at different facilities. They're going to give him a physical, find out what kind of medical condition he's in. And it'll probably be the quickest physical he's ever had in his life because they're not going to run through a bunch of things. But they'll do that.
Well, what do they do? Tell me. What do they do? What's the physical? What are they going to run them through?
Okay, well, you know, they're going to check your heart. They're going to check your blood pressure. They're going to ask you if you have any medical conditions. They're going to look in your ears and your throat. They're going to look in your nose. They're going to ask you if you have problems going to the bathroom. Are you constipated? He'll probably be constipated when he gets there just from nerves. They're going to run him through like a whole checklist, just like you went to the doctor. They're going to run, or anybody, they're going to run through all this and they're going to determine what his physical condition is. Because he may end up having a
is
job.
It like,
I say may, because they may have him in isolation.
Life. Larry.
Maybe. Yeah.
Is it like a medical exam room that we all go into for the physical?
Yeah.
Or is it something very frightening and clinical and gray?
Well, okay. It's like you're going into a medical exam room, except they don't have all the shit along the walls. They've got a door that locks, and there's a place for a cop to sit there with the nurse or whoever. It's like a sparse room, but it has an examination table on it. So it's very, very brief. He's not really going to be left alone in there. Although I suppose if they had to, they could use it as a holding cell. But they'll run him through this, and then he gets to meet the shrink. That was always my favorite part, because I'd fuck with the shrinks endlessly. So he's going to meet the shrink, and they're going to ask him, do you have problems sleeping? Do you wet the bed? Do you have bad dreams? Do you want to kill anybody? I loved it when they asked me, do you want to kill anybody here? And I go, where, here? And I'd look around the room. I said, well, I don't see anybody here I want to kill. She goes, would you tell me if you were going to? I go, no. But anyway, so they'll run him through the psychological test. They'll run him through the medical test. Then they need to classify him, which is actually pretty easy to do because he's never fucking getting out. So what's really to classify? Gee. They may PC him. You know what PC is, protective custody.
Protective custody.
Well, my sources within the inmate rumor mill say that, you know, the families are upset that he took a plea and they're not going to kill him. Well, the rumor is among people that I know that he's going to get some jailhouse justice. You know what that is?
Well, I know what I think it is, but you give me the real story.
Jailhouse justice means that someone's going to kill him in there. Somebody is going to want to take a name. First of all, the majority of these people, Ash, they're never getting out. They're not. They're serving life sentences. They're serving 30 years. They're not really getting out. Okay. What do they do? They can't lock them up again. So somebody is going to want to get a name for themselves, and they'll put out a hit on him. They'll kill him. They'll get a lot of what's called street cred for doing that, a lot of respect. And it's possible that someone on the outside could pay someone who has a family member, let's say a family member of one of the dead kids, knows somebody that knows somebody who knows someone in there. So some money changes hands, and they put a hit out on him, and, you know, they turn him off like a fucking light switch. He's dead. He's a target, a perpetual target. He's going to have to watch his back. He's not a scary guy. He may end up being someone's bitch for all we know. Someone will put a wig on him. Who knows? But the guy.
Let me ask you this, because I also think jailhouse justice isn't just that he's got a hit on him to kill him. It's also that somebody wants to shank him so he knows what it felt like, what he did to the kids.
Could be. Remember that these people in there, none of them, well, I shouldn't say none of them, a great deal of them are not mentally stable anyway. So that's highly possible. Maybe somebody will shiv him or something. That is part of jailhouse justice. I've seen people get stuck before. I've been in three different prison riots, so I've seen all this shit. But I predict within a year or less that he's either going to be dead or he's going to be physically injured in some way. Then they'll transport him, take him to a real hospital, and they'll let him stay there and get well and all this bullshit. Finally, they'll move him back over to the prison, back to Boise, and he'll be in protective custody for the rest of his life because they won't be able to put him in general population. They're going to consider that like a threat to the institution itself. I mean, it is what it is. So, I sent him in my book.
You know, I wonder.
Hold on. To help him
let me
adjust.
Ask you, Prison Politics 101. Let me ask you this, Larry. And by the way, everybody, Prison Politics 101 is just one. I already mentioned this in the intro, but it's one of Larry's books. He has another one, Lies My Lawyer Told Me. He's got a whole array, all great reading from somebody who's lived it, walked in the shoes. But Larry, I thought if he were on death row, he would effectively be sort of in PC.
Well,
he's not on death row. So what kind of PC would he be in considering he's so high profile, but he is a lifer?
He's a lifer. So they're not going to put him on death row, but they have, even within a maximum security facility, death row sits by itself because those people have limited contact with people. They're not going out to the yard or anything. I mean, there's a possibility that Kohlberger can go out to the yard with a bunch of other lifers, a bunch of other people serving 40 years. But putting him in PC means that he's going to be living in a cell. Essentially, imagine living in your bathroom for the rest of your life, and you're only getting out a few hours a day or a few hours a week, and you're going nuts. And you're living, I don't know if they have TVs in there or not, but the only solace you have is maybe your knockoff Sony Walkman radio or something. He's reading my book, whatever. Getting magazines, newspapers. So he's going to have a hectic life. I mean, he'll also get, and I talked to you about this at one point on one of the episodes on News Nation. He's going to get groupies. He's going to get all the, remember how Charlie Manson had all these women? Menendez.
He already has them.
That's what he talked about.
Yeah, he already had them in the Moscow lockup. There was already this group of crazy. And listen, they're still there. They think that somebody else did it. They think he's innocent.
Yeah, well, could be, but what do I know? But the point is,
no, not could be. He committed the murders, and he admitted it in court.
Okay, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I believe he did it, but who knows? A spaceship could land also outside your house. But at any rate, he's going to have all these groupies, a shitload of groupies. They're going to want to marry him. They're going to want to have his baby. They're going to want to try to help him escape. They're going to put money on his commissary books. So in one aspect, on the outside, he's going to have a following of people that think he's a celebrity. The people on the inside are going to think he's a piece of shit. He can't do. I mean, look at, let's use Diddy as an example. Diddy has money. He has influence. He can help people out on the inside. He's making friends, I'm sure of it. What could Brian Kohlberger possibly do for anyone on the inside? Nothing. Zero people.
Zero.
Zero. And hell, maybe he'll have some money left over in his trust account after they kill him. And that could go to the victims' families. They'll put it in a victims' fund. That's what I see.
Yeah. You know, it's funny when you say, what can he do? What can he offer anybody? Even Murdoch could offer legal help to fellow inmates. He could say, look, I'll work on your appeal for you. He's valuable. He has value for the rest of his life to every inmate that walks through that facility. But Kohlberger has criminal justice. I don't know what that's going to do for anybody who's already locked up.
Well, I suppose that means he could get a job, or he could have gotten a job at one point as working in psychology or something, examining why people commit crimes. I know that a lot of prison workers have criminal justice degrees. I think they only do that so they can get promoted. You know, it's like people actually, they get political science degrees. You always ask people, what are you taking? Well, I'm going to get a bachelor's in political science. What are you going to do with it? I mean, what's he going to do with his degree? And people that are serving forever like him, they don't have the same programming needs that people have when they're getting out. So they're not going to spend the money to run him through all these programs to rehabilitate him and make him a better person. He's like, essentially, he's in fucking limbo for the rest of his life. That is his life. Getting out a few hours a day, living in his bathroom, taking a shower and going back to the bathroom. That's it. That's all he's going to do. He's got to watch his food. Maybe somebody will stick some glass in his food.
Really?
Maybe. Oh, sure. You can
that happens.
People put gravel. They put pieces of glass. They put pieces of wood. They put like rat poison and cleaning chemicals. Yeah, you can always get to someone. Absolutely.
Is that, that's people in the kitchen staff, the people who are doing the cooking, that they're the ones that do that?
Well, there's inmates. Inmates essentially run the prison, all prisons. And they're moving food around. Other than doing custody work, inmates are doing maintenance. The guy's coming by with the library cart, shoving books at you or something. So people have access to people. You know, somebody needs to carry that contract out. They need to do the hit. Somebody pays somebody off. They give them commissary. They put money on their books. Yes, slip this in Kohlberger's food. It could be done. Absolutely. Hell, if I was there, I'd do it.
Let me ask you this, Larry. I mean, listen, I think all of us would like a little vengeance on behalf of those families, certainly.
Absolutely.
I have this question about... I go back to the day one of walking into the rest of your life, but I thought about all the people who handle him, whether they're administrators or the medical staff or the guards who are going to walk him in his shackles. Are they dispassionate about each inmate and each inmate's history? Or do some of these guards say, hey, this one's for Steve Gonzalez and shove him? Like, how do they behave?
Well, they'll treat him like shit. It's kind of like, when you get people that are child molesters and they come into a prison and every child molester says kiddie porn, I'm there for drugs, I'm there for mail fraud, stock fraud, whatever it is. Nobody wants to admit what they're there for. So they make something up. Meanwhile, the cops hate these people too. The cops want to get to them, but they can't do it. So the cops will drop a dime to the inmates and say, yeah, that's what this guy is here for. Because they know that the inmates will take care of them. But Ash, how can this guy hide? Because everybody fucking knows who he is. Enough people hate him.
Yeah, look at there's no
Chris
hiding.
Watts? They had to move Chris Watts out of where he was. Took him out of state. I think it was Colorado.
Out of state.
They had to take him out of state.
By the way, About that, I talked to a prison warden on my News Nation show, and the prison warden, he's a retired prison warden, said he did not believe that Idaho has the funds nor the savvy to protect someone of his ilk, and that they will contract him out to a different state. Do you think that'll happen?
Yeah, it could happen. That's a subjective opinion. They could create a cell. He's not the only person serving life in Idaho, or he won't be. So
but
they
he's
may
the
already
only person
have an
like
area
that.
Of that prison. Well, remember, this is a maximum security. This isn't a low. This isn't a medium. This isn't a kiddie camp somewhere. So they're set up to hold people that are serving max or life sentence or maximum life sentences, death row. So I believe they do have facilities there. But you know what? Idaho is a small state. So who's to say that some of these correctional workers don't have family or know people that know the parents or know the family of these dead kids? And perhaps they'll look the other way. Happens all the time. You can so get the people.
So, but is that sort of lends credence to what this former warden said, that he doesn't think that Idaho can really do the job. And maybe it's because it's so small and that there is a one degree of separation. Maybe it's for because of budgets. It's a small tax base. Do you think that Brian Koberger will be contracted out to another state?
Well, they could send him to the feds too. The feds have a compact agreement with all the different state prisons to hold high security inmates. Maybe they'll send him to ADX. You know what that is in Colorado? It's the maximum security.
Yeah, the supermax.
The supermax, supermax. Possibility they'll send him there. But that's like where they have the Al-Qaeda people and the 9/11 people and all this shit. Is Koberger
and Jahar Tsarnaev, the Boston Marathon bomber, yeah. Jahar Tsarnaev is, okay. Is that the supermax?
Is Koberger really a threat to the inmate population? Think about that. He has a following on the
somebody
outside.
Said to me, yes. Somebody said to me, yes, because what's he got to lose? If he's enjoying what he went through, maybe he wants to do it again and somehow come off with the perfect in-house murder in prison. And maybe the first one that was never solved. You just don't know. What's he got to lose? What are they going to do? Punish him?
I suppose that's possible, but he's subject to controlled movement. They're going to shake his cell down all the time. People are going to be watching him. It's not like he's just fucking roaming free out on a prison yard. That's really where that kind of stuff would happen, where you're cornering somebody in the showers. What you do is you take like a pair of socks and you put a pair of socks. You put some padlocks in them. You put some bars of soap and boom, you bounce it off his head, split it open like a watermelon or something. But he's not going to have the type of freedom, essentially, for that to happen. Could it happen? Sure. Is it likely to happen? No.
So I get this image as you're saying this, and I'm thinking, I look at Koberger and his psychosis as like Hannibal Lecter. He's very bright and manipulative, conniving, strategic. And I almost think that this would be his lifelong puzzle, how to pull off the next perfect crime. And I wonder what it will be like, therefore, for the prison guards. Do they enter his cell differently than someone else who is not quite as bright, is just dangerous generally?
Okay.
This guy's dangerous in a strategic way.
Okay, they have protocol when they enter a lifer's sentence. They've got a little hatch.
A lifer's cell?
What's that?
So start that. We'll start that again.
Okay. On the door of the cell, I don't think it's going to be bars. It'll probably be a steel door. That's what they're going to. There's a metal hatch. It's a horizontal hatch where they could shove a food tray through. But what they'll do is they'll have him back up to the door with his hands behind his back. And they'll reach in there and they'll handcuff him before they take him out. So and that's protocol for someone serving a life sentence or on death row. So they'll pull him out and he'll already be restrained before he even leaves the cell. So, I mean, they'll have this guy under close control. I don't think they're going to put leg chains on him. It's controlled movement, completely controlled movement.
Well,
so he's not going to have a lot of alone time.
That former warden with whom I spoke on News Nation said that he will be in leg shackles more than likely for all of his movements, hand and leg shackles for all of his movements.
Well, where's he going to go, Ash? He's going to be he's going to be in a secured housing unit. The shower is within the secured housing unit. So if they've got the guy all shackled up, handcuffs and such behind his back, they take him over to the shower. He can't get out of that housing unit. There's just no way to get out of there. So what is the purpose of putting a leg shackle on him? If they were moving him, though, let's say they were moving him to, taking him out of the prison to go see a doctor or something. Sure. Taking him to a court date. Yeah, they would definitely leg shackle.
You know what I think the purpose is? I don't think the purpose is for escape. I don't think that's the concern when it comes to Brian Kober. I think it's for the protection. It is, well, maybe part of that, but also keep him under control. Tell him who's boss. You're no longer running the show. And also to protect those around him, because I do see him as Hannibal Lecter. I do see that he could do something to people around him. Maybe not escape, but do something horrendous to someone else.
I suppose it's possible, but it's kind of hard to do when you're shackled behind your back, isn't it?
I agree. Right? I agree. But this is Brian Koberger, who's, wise enough. I also see him feigning being, incapacitated in his cell. And I see him feigning forcing an entry of guards into his cell, after which he could have Adam.
Possibly, but they'll bring 3, 4, 5 guards over to his cell. They're not going to pop that cell door open with one person. They'll be all set. They'll have their tear gas and they'll have their clubs and such. They know, I mean, these people aren't stupid. They know how to handle high security inmates. So it's not going to be a fucking cakewalk, but you're right. Maybe he's going to try to get into their heads. If he's read my book, let me pitch my book again. I teach inmates how to manipulate prison staff, how to get into the staff's minds, how to get them to do stuff and they don't even realize it. So the staff, they can be manipulated. So, I mean, sky's the limit for him. He can try whatever he wants. Let's say that somebody is in an institution, a low or a medium, even somebody at a high security, they've got an outdate 10, 15, 20 years, they're getting out. So they want to keep their good time and such. They're not really going to do anything. He's never getting out. He has no good time to lose. He has no parole date coming up. So, you know, based on what you were saying, he can really do anything. What are they going to do to him? Lock him back up? Give him a life sentence? Put him in the SHU? He's already there.
So the other side of the coin is I try to look long term, and I imagine he's starting to look long term.
Yeah,
I try to look long term at prison reform, let's just say. If he were locked up 40 years ago, how different is it now for someone who was put away 40 years ago and is looking for another? He's still, you know, he's probably only 60 and he's probably going to live another 20. Let's look ahead 40 years, Larry. How much change do you think is going to happen within the prison system about their daily lives and their benefits or their you know, now they get iPads? You know, how much change do you think is going to happen from now to 20 years, now to 40 years, and then to 60? Because I believe he'll be there 60 years till he's 90.
Well, they're already using the iPads for visits. So they've already kind of cut a lot of the visits out where you can call your family member and visit with them all the time. Probably the nutritional values will change the food. They're going to automate. Everything's automating. They'll probably build a new cell block or something, a new prison on the grounds where they can have less staff. It'll be like ADX, where everything is automated, less contact with the inmates, maybe more automated medical care. You know, the federal prison system right now is out of money. They're not really giving the inmates the nutritional values they're supposed to. So instead of giving people regular food, maybe in 20 years, 30 years, they're going to give you like an energy bar. This has all your nutrition in it that you need. You're not getting regular food. This is it. They're going to get rid of all the toilet paper. They're going to put some kind of bidet in all the cells or something to save money. I believe everything is going to turn into automation. They'll probably have, well, he's going to have like a paper mache jumpsuit. They don't want him hanging himself. They want to keep him well so he could serve his whole sentence. But I believe a lot of these facilities are not going to have cloth uniforms anymore. It's all going to be like biodegradable disposable clothes. Everything will change. The shoes, the clothes, everything. The visits, you name it.
You know, Brian Koberger's first requests upon being put into the Moscow jail was that he was vegan, and the Moscow jail, being teeny tiny, still accommodated for his vegan diet. Is that a federal law? Is it a state law? Is it a requirement no matter what? If you have some sort of dietary restriction, not religious, just dietary, that they have to accommodate?
Not really, because that's a personal choice. It's like, we don't offer that here. Perhaps when he was in the Moscow jail, he wanted to use that as a tool to get transferred by asking for vegan food and knowing they maybe didn't have it. He wanted to take a car ride or something. Who knows? But they're not bound, other than religious, as you pointed out, they're not bound to just give you special food because you want it. If he had a dietary restriction, he was diabetic or something, they'd have to give him food that met that. But there's people that are in the hospital that are diabetic and they're giving them sugar Jell-O and such. So a lot of things just aren't followed. I mean, maybe he'll become friends with somebody and they'll give him some Pruno. Colbert will be there getting drunk on Friday night. Who knows? It's possible.
You know, I keep wondering about the first night that he lays his head on the pillow in his new home for 60 years.
He won't be able to.
Wait, let me ask a question. Let me ask a question. Okay. Hold on one second, because there's crosstalk and we won't be able to hear it. So hold on. I keep wondering about the first night that Brian Koberger is going to lay his head on the pillow in his new, you know, his new forever home, his new lockup. And I remember something you once told me, that almost everybody cries.
They do, because the whole realization has hit them. This is what it has come down to. And they can't sleep the first. I slept the first night like a baby because I was fucking guilty as a motherfucker. But people lay awake and they can't sleep. And every little fucking noise and the pipes in the wall, everything freaks them out. And then, you know, this is an old prison in Idaho. Maybe there's rats in the walls. And maybe he'll get a little pet or something. I don't know. But he's going to hear all these noises. Then he's going to hear the other inmates. They're going to be assholes banging on the wall. They will. They're going to bang on the wall. They're going to fuck with him. And they're going to tell him they're going to kill him. They won't have any access to him. They just want to get into his head and fuck with him. I've seen it several times. But this will all come to a head. If he's not on psych meds now, he will be. Give him a couple weeks. But that's one of the things they're going to ask him when he goes through R&D, receiving and discharge, as far as like being depressed and such. So maybe they're doping him up now. I had a problem for a while sleeping, and they gave me something called dioxapen. And I took it a couple times, but I had a problem after I did. And I used to play a lot of chess in there. This is before I was sentenced. And it fucked with my head. I didn't engage. I couldn't play chess anymore. I couldn't think. So who knows? Maybe our friend Colbert will be a fucking zombie or something. It's possible.
Oh, but go back to that first night, because I do remember you telling me you could hear inmates crying.
I can hear people.
And the psychology of that, the fear and the smallness of you just overtakes you for that first night.
It doesn't matter how tough you are. Doesn't matter who you are. The whole realization that this is what your life is going to be like for the rest of your life. And you work your way through your life, almost like from the day you were born and you were a kid, right up to that point. And you realize life as you know it is over. There's no more birthdays with family, no more having sex with women, although maybe some dude will have sex with them, who knows. But there's no real relationships or anything. And he's got no hope. And that's what a lot of people, they live to see their families. They know they're all getting out. So a person serving a life sentence their first night in there, it just completely fucks with their head. You know, maybe he'll try to kill himself. It's possible. It's a scary thought. If it was me and I got a life sentence, and I mean, I've never done what he did. If I did today what I did back in the 90s that got me locked up, they'd weld the cell door closed. You know, I'd never get out. But if I was looking at four life sentences or something, I would just tell them to give me the needle. I'd say goodbye to everyone. Well, you know, I had a good. I've got
and,
a pacemaker.
And he doesn't have that choice now, right? He doesn't have that choice, Larry. But
to get COVID, I thought I was dead. I told everyone I had a good run. I'll see you on the other side.
Larry, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Brian Koberger has no more choices left. He doesn't get to choose anything anymore. And I wonder, you touched it. Maybe he'll try to kill himself. But what's the likelihood? And when will they start backing off watching for that? Like, they'll do it in the beginning, right? They'll watch you carefully. Suicide watch is probably a likely thing in the beginning. But when do they start backing off that?
They're really not going to. Because remember that a lot of these psychologists, they're contractors coming in and they're getting paid for every little fucking thing they do. So they'll constantly be checking on him. They're supposed to write a report on him, what his mental state is. I think that's a requirement of people on death row. Well, people serving a life sentence, but then look at Epstein. They were supposed to check on him every, 2 hours or something, and they didn't do it? So some things with Koberger will fall through the cracks, but this guy is going to be evaluated and watched for the rest of his life. And Brian Koberger's world has changed, and it's going to change even more, I don't know, by August when they move him to wherever he's touching down. Maybe he won't even go to the
Larry
maximum center there in Idaho. Maybe they'll take him right out of state. Maybe.
Larry, I can't thank you enough. You know how much I appreciate this insight of yours. There's nobody who knows the inside better than you and can really convey it to everybody who hasn't walked in the shoes and may never walk in the shoes. And let's just pray for everybody watching that they don't end up walking in those shoes. Larry, thank you so much for this.
Okay, Ash, good to be with you. Let's pray somebody kills that bastard.
I think that's what the families probably would prefer. Thanks, Larry. I love my conversations with Larry Levine. I'm not kidding. That's probably in my career. I've probably talked to him over 36 times, and I always learn something new each time I talk to him. Like, he told me he was in the military before. I didn't know that. We talked off camera. Like, there's always something new about Larry, but he's got a lot of lived experience, and he's salty as hell, and I love that. But there you go. I don't think that the things that Larry just told us, I don't think that's going to be solace for Steve Gonsalves and other family members who, you know, maybe they were happy with the deal, but they're not getting their kids back and there will never be anything that makes them whole. But at least it's something, right? At least it's something to know. You never get away with this stuff. You don't. You don't get away with murder. You just don't. And anybody who thinks that this deal is somehow the easy way out, when you're 30 years old and you easily could live to 90, just imagine counting down 60 years, double the life he's already lived in a box, mostly by himself, eating the same food, never again wearing clothes that aren't prison issue, never again using soap that isn't prison commissary. There's a lot of retribution there, right? Maybe not complete retributive justice, but there's a lot of retribution there. And I hope one day that gives some kind of peace to those family members. Anyway, listen, as always, I'm so thankful and fortunate that you're part of this community. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being a part of Drop Dead Serious. If you're listening, God bless you and thank you. If you're watching, I just adore that you do this. And remember my motto, the truth isn't just serious, it's Drop Dead Serious.